I want to talk to you about not human relations as such, human values, civil rights, the so-called Negro problem as such. I want to try to put some of these things into focus. Because years ago, as we will remember, the so-called race problem in this country was something that, if it was as large as some people thought it was merely a southern problem. Others try to make it a city problem. Others try to make it a neighborhood problem in one city. Well, whether you like it or not, or whether I like it or not, or whether any of us like it, the so-called problem of color has become a world problem. And indeed, if anybody had wanted to play it down or to forget about it, that time has long since passed. I have no feeling one way or the other about it, but it is a fact that whenever anything is done concerning the kicking around of a minority member in this country, it's made world propaganda. I think it's very interesting that the recent killings in Mississippi, young boy Emmett Till murdered, Reverend G.W. Lee murdered, Mr. Lamar Smith murdered, Gus Kort shot four times and managed to live. I could go on citing them. But each one of those instances reported throughout this country and the world. And when the people charged with the murder of Emmett Till, the colored boy, 14-year-old boy, murdered for allegedly whistling at somebody. As I look at it, I get this perspective. I was attending a conference at Harvard Law School. It's a conference entitled Government Under Law. All of you know what that means. It was honoring the former Chief Justice John R. Marshall and his dedication to the principle that every governmental agency operated solely under the law, of course, being supreme. And at this conference, they had the leading people from all over the world of the English-speaking countries, the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, the Associate Justices there, the two that could make it, Mr. Justice Burton and Mr. Justice Frankfurter. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Canada, the Master of the Rolls, Great Britain, the Chief Justice of Australia, indeed, even the Chief Justice of the Union of South Africa, and judges on lower levels from all of these places, and lawyers from throughout the country, about 1,000 people. And while discussing all of these problems brought out by and reanalyzing what Chief Justice Marshall had said, what the courts had been saying from that day until this, of the meaning of government under law, to have on the second day of that three-day conference the announcement made that the jury down in Mississippi had turned those two men loose who later openly confessed to that murder hit everybody at that meeting with a little force. I think also the fact that a careful survey made of the foreign press showed that every single decent country in the world roundly condemned what had happened in Mississippi. And over significant was the fact that the non-communist press was much more vociferous in condemning Mississippi than the communist press. That we have to consider in its proper viewpoint in considering this so-called problem of man and race. Maybe it takes an Emmett Till's murder to rock some of us on our feet. But for every time that type of thing happens, there are hundreds and thousands of other instances that sort of run by people's minds. And even then, as in every one of these cases, all the way back as far as we go in history, there is an effort made to wash bloods off of hands, to wash the blood off. An effort has even been made in Mississippi to escape responsibility for what's been going on. They said, for example, that the body that was found was not the body of Emmett Till. Well, he was only identified by his mother, that's all. And anybody would imagine that a mother would know her own child. They even said that the NAACP arranged for the murder so we'd have something to talk about. Well, if the only way we could get attention to this problem would be to murder somebody in Mississippi, with all of the available ones down there, it wouldn't be a poor little 14-year-old boy from Chicago. They also said that he shouldn't have been killed, but he should have been punished. They've tried every way possible to explain away the guilt, not of the two men involved. I'm not worried about them, not at all. Try to explain away the guilt of the good people that allowed men like that to go free. They try to explain why, as a good person, I didn't do anything about it in Mississippi. That's what it is. That's that personal blood we're trying to wash off down there. You can't do it that way. Because the good people in the South, and indeed good people in all of our states, are the ones that are responsible for the bad people getting away with what they get away with. It's the atmosphere that's created that allows it. And every step of the way in this fight, there have always been reasons given for violating the law of the land. And the same reasons are always given. One is that these outside organizations are trumping up this stuff. They're interfering with the good race relations. That the object of the Negro, the good Negro, is to be a nice, good Negro. And if he was left alone, he'd be a nice one. Those old nasty northern agitators are always agitating them. Well, I love this northern agitator, because the one northern agitator they've been talking about so much recently was born and raised way up south in Baltimore, Maryland. That's where he was. The other northern agitator they used to talk about until he died, Walter White, was born and raised way up south in Atlanta, Georgia. Truth of the matter is that the policy controlling all of this is done by the Negroes and their friends in the South. Then they try all of the other arguments. Every step of the way, the argument has been made, the Negroes are looking for social equality. And there they really have us over a barrel. Because we can't defend ourselves on it, because simple reason we don't know what social equality is and nobody else does. All of these professors of sociology, not to the contrary. Because social equality means one thing here and it means another thing in Chicago and a third thing in Mississippi and a fourth thing in Alabama. In some areas of social equality, for a Negro to be alive is social equality. To have a job is definitely social equality. I remember, for example, that when we had our primary case in Texas and South Carolina, the charge was made that we were really driving toward intermarriage. That used to always make me pull hair out. Because I have never yet heard of anybody standing in line waiting to vote and saying, oh, by the way, will you please marry me? I mean, you don't do that in the line waiting to vote. In Columbia, South Carolina, some years back when we had our primary case, the then Grand Kriegel of the Klan, Old Man Green, since he's died, I mean, I still have faith in my Lord. He gets around to it at times. It's a little slow. But Green was alive then. And Green was making this big Klan speech. And he was building it up, you know, step by step, as these crowd boys can do. And he's saying that if they allow these Negroes to vote in the primary election, then the next thing they'll be doing this. Then they'll be doing this, and then, you know, building it up and up. And then he says, and the next thing you know, he got to his real peroration. He said, the next thing you know, some big black bark negra will be rapping on your door asking for your daughter's hand in marriage. Well, for a Negro sharecropper, she was overdressed. The first place, she had shoes on. And stockings and a dress. I saw the last time I was in Birmingham last week, when these reports first came out, I said, young lady, look, just facts, what did you have on? And she said, just what I have on today. She was about as much overdressed as I am. The truth of the matter is that the only way she would have been acceptable to answer this letter, I can tell you, the only way she would have been acceptable would have been to have driven up there in nothing more important than an ox cart with a bandana over her head and had driven to the kitchen. They resented her coming up there as the equal of anybody else. And the point that I don't like about all of this is that people in the North, if you please, as well as people in the South, continue to look at this problem in the way that Senator Eastland would like us to view it. Has the university until this moment said that they will admit all Negroes on the same basis as others? No, they haven't said it yet. So how is it just Miss Lucy? The only thing wrong with Arthurine Lucy was she was black. That's the only thing wrong with her. And she had no business in there in their books. And I say today, if we're going to face this problem of race relations as it applies in this country, we must get rid of all of our old theories of the Negro begging for, weeping for, and the other side generously giving from the bounty of their heart rights that are guaranteed by the Constitution to all of us. It's not a question of a white student at the University of Alabama giving up something by letting Miss Lucy in? They're not giving up anything. They have up to today enjoyed the privilege, if you please, of excluding her, but that isn't by right. It's been by brute force. The real problem in approaching this will run down three or four levels as I see it. One is timing. This letter here is in the same category. Don't move too fast. The time is not ripe. Well, at times, even in a college campus, I have to forget all of my training and get right down in the street. The time is not ripe. The Emancipation Proclamation was signed some 92 years ago. And if things don't get ripe within 92 years, they must get rotten. The time is not ripe because you can't legislate mores and customs. No efforts being made to legislate mores and customs. There is no power the Supreme Court of the United States has, and I, for example, would be one who would oppose any such power to tell you that you have to like or associate with somebody you don't want to associate with. There's no power under the sun that can make the students of any school accept the student. And there's likewise no power on that student body to exclude that student. One great civil libertarian has said that the power and the right that I have to swing my fist is absolute and without control, up to and including the tip end of your nose. I can swing it all I want to swing, my fist. But when I get to somebody else's nose, my right to swing my fist stops. Anybody has a right to say, I do not want to go to school with a Negro. Anybody has a right to say, I will not go to college with a Negro. But nobody has a right to say that that Negro can't go to my college. If you don't want to go to college with Negroes, get out. And if you find that the next college you go to has Negroes, get out of that one. You still have maintained your right, and I'll protect your right. You go from college to college, you end up, there are no colleges where there aren't Negroes. You still have your constitutional right to stay away from college and die a dummy. You still keep your right. And I'll protect your right. But you have no right to do anything to prevent the Negro from going there. Now, law is actually that simple. These students had a right, if you please. I'm not saying they should exercise it. But they had a right to have a peaceful demonstration and saying, we don't like Negroes. But they had no right to block her from coming in. They had no right to set up machinery which they knew would end up and either her being withdrawn or she was going to get killed. And the university made no effort to stop the mob at all. They had 30 state highway patrolmen there on the campus and didn't use them. Do you know what the most that they did? The most that the highway patrol did was to talk to the students and the outsiders too and say, don't you think you are going too far? Don't you think you should disperse? As a mob of 2,000 that have thrown rocks at the president. And have thrown a rotten egg at the top man of the highway patrol. Now, I can just imagine what would happen in Alabama, in Tuscaloosa, if a group of Negroes stoned a highway patrolman. I would be willing to stand here and wager $100 for every live Negro you produced afterwards. No, that's actually the truth. And I mean, that's how discriminatory all of this thing is. Students identified led the mob on Friday night, Saturday night, and even Sunday night. On each occasion, they ended up at the president's house calling him every dirty name they could call him to his face, throwing firecrackers on his porch against his wife. On Monday, students threw rotten eggs and a tomato and hit his wife. The students said that they wanted to kill Arthur and Lucy. Down with everything. They were in the forefront of this mob bent on murder and destruction. There was an assistant dean of men of the university that admitted he was with the mob on every occasion and could identify all of the leaders. And as a result of what happened on February 6th, Arthur E. Lucy is put out and not a single student's been disciplined. Now that just fails to make sense in our country today. The reason I emphasize this one is because it's the latest one, but it's not the last one. We have a case pending against the University of Georgia. We have 5 cases pending against the University of Florida. This case is still in court in Alabama. There will be other instances. But I tell you, as sure as I'm standing here, if we reach the stage where we're going to continue to let these white citizens' councils and people of that type to take over and contaminate the minds of college students, our children in school, we've reached a real sorry state of affairs. This one ringleader made a speech in Birmingham night before last, right, and dared them to put him out. Dared the officials to put him out. Well, when I was in college, I was a ringleader of a lot of things. As a matter of fact, I organized 3 strikes while I was there. But honest to goodness, as long as I was in college, I never dared them to put me out for one good reason. I knew what would happen. But the University of Alabama, I hope in the question period, we will consider not necessarily as a symbol of what's typical. It's the opposite of what has happened up to date. It possibly could be typical of the road from herein. The difference between whether or not it will be typical or an isolated instance depends solely on what the good people, South and North, are going to do about it. When I mentioned voting, I hope I did not give the impression that all of the voting in the area has cleaned up. It has not. In Mississippi, Negroes have been taken off the record books. Until now, it's doubtful whether we have more than 20,000 in the whole state. The federal government has not done one thing to stop it. Not one man has been indicted in Mississippi for taking Negroes' names off the books and for taking Negroes' votes and throwing them away in the year of 1955. I hope you don't get the idea that the educational problem is the only problem we face. If you want a short rundown of the problem as I see it, it runs this way. It's the removing of all of the remaining barriers insofar as voting and registration in the South. It means the removing of physical violence as a threat and a deterrent to exercise of our rights, which only can be done through additional legislation through Congress to strengthen the civil rights bill. We need legislation that will guarantee that Negroes and other members of minority groups are not denied the right to employment solely because of race, religion, or national origin. We need the necessary protection of our federal and state governments to assure us that we will not be denied housing solely on the basis of race, and that we will not be required to live in isolated Jim Crow areas, North as well as South. The reason I would like to leave on that point is this. The biggest job in the country, North as well as South today, is the need for community education. This need for feeling that it is my responsibility, not somebody else's responsibility. Not the constant efforts to justify what we in our own hearts know is something that's horribly wrong. And standing around the fringe of the meeting, just listening and not members of the meeting, were a lot of white students from the University of South Carolina. And when he got to this big peroration, the next thing you know, some big black bog Negro will be rapping on the door asking for your daughter's hand in marriage. They spontaneously said, well, she could say no, couldn't she? And it's just that silly. But each step of the way this goes along, and each step of the way they have lost, and each step of the way they have found new ways of fighting back. And at the same time, the Negroes and their allies have tried to use the courts. Then we get up through these decision after decision after decision, we get this decision on the elementary and high school level. And there they were in trouble. In the first place, it was a unanimous decision. It was by 9 justices, including 3 from the Deep South. So all they could do was rant and rave. And then they started careful planning, which anybody with any sense knew they would have to do. It was working too well. County after county and state after state, between May of 54 and September of the past year, had moved to completely desegregate their schools. As a matter of fact, I would be unfair if I stood in the state of Illinois and didn't say that southern states like Missouri and West Virginia made more progress than has been made in southern Illinois in getting rid of segregated schools. But they made terrific progress. And if nothing had blocked it, the good people in these southern states would have worked together to do it in a lawful manner, regardless of how many years they might have needed to do it. And it would have been worked out. But they couldn't allow that because they knew that the day that Negro and white kids went to elementary school together and to high school together and went into the armed services on an integrated basis, and came out into the colleges and went to school on an integrated basis, the politicians of the South knew as soon as that happened, they would have to get something better than the race issue to get reelected on. and having not mentality for anything else, they would be out of business. That they knew. So something had to be done. And if you want to know why these people have been murdered, why we have these other pressures I'll tell you about, it develops at the beginning of what was known as the White Citizens' Councils in the South. They started in Mississippi and they spread like wildfire. They're not the Ku Klux Klan type. Oh, no. They're the best people in the community. Invariably, you'll find that the chairman of the committee in town, A or B, will be either the president of the bank or the chairman of the Chamber of Commerce or the local judge. They say they're opposed to violence, but they're opposed to desegregation, and they will do everything lawful to maintain segregation. Then we get in a lot of trouble with what they consider to be lawful. They admit that they use every economic pressure possible. In one town in Mississippi, Yazoo City, some 30-odd Negroes signed a petition with the school board asking the school board to desegregate the school. The White Citizens Council published that list on the back page of the daily paper and warned all of the readers to take whatever steps they needed to take to get those names off. In the group were two Negro grocerymen. They couldn't buy a loaf of bread wholesale. They couldn't buy anything. They were driven out of business. That is, quote, lawful. End quote. A plumbing contractor has run out of business. All three of them are up in Chicago trying to make a living. Everyone on that list who had a job was immediately fired. They say that's lawful. Every Negro with a mortgage on his land who signed the school petition was pushed. And foreclosures were started. The only thing we could do was to pool our resources and get all the organizations we could find willing to do something instead of talking about it, to put money in a Memphis bank, the Tri-State Bank, so that that money could be in turn loaned to the Negroes in Mississippi to save their property. We started out to get $125,000 in that fund. I want you to know that fund now runs $325,000. And it broke the back of that one, because as soon as the mortgage boys that were getting 10 and 12%, you know, they had no limits down there with the Negro involved. They were holding up this money away from them, denying themselves the 10 and 12% interest in order to keep the Negroes from standing up for their rights. Lo and behold, the Negroes are still standing up for their rights and getting their money someplace else. So all they end up with is losing 10 and 12%. So we found many of them notifying the Negroes that if you come around the back door so nobody sees you, I'll lend you the money. That didn't stop them. Now they refuse to let Negroes have crop loans to put the crop in the ground so they can, it's the only thing they can live on. Every step of the way, they're going to block them. Negro service station that can't get gasoline to sell. Negro soda vendors that can't get certain kinds of soda to sell. And as a result of this atmosphere of saying that the Supreme Court is a deliberate communist-infiltrated body, etc., and all of these other things that I hate to repeat, they created the atmosphere in Mississippi that makes it possible for the hoodlums to murder Negroes and go scot-free. And you cannot say you're not responsible for that. They moved over into South Carolina and did the same thing. In the town of Orangeburg, South Carolina, in the little town of Ellery nearby, at one time, a Negro couldn't buy a bottle of milk for his child. That's lawful yet. They wouldn't sell him anything. Then they said they would agree to sell. Those Negroes set up a counter boycott down there, bless their souls. They set up carpools and went into Columbia and bought their stuff in Columbia, South Carolina. Gas stations down there run out of business. That's the type of thing we don't realize is going on. That's the type of thing, I tell you, that we're up against right now in Alabama. This is what I want to get to. Because you've heard about the Arthurine Lucy case. And I know you've marveled at the fact, marvel is not the word, you're shocked at the fact that one lone Negro girl could wreck a whole state university. And what I love is how somebody can say in one breath that anything that white is supreme and white supremacy must be maintained, and then say that one poor colored girl can contaminate 7,000 white students. You were shocked at what happened, yes. I was shocked. Because it's the first campus that any Negro student has attended in the Deep South where anything like this has happened. On every other campus, the Negroes were welcomed by the students. On every other campus, the Negroes were welcomed by the faculty. And on this campus, they're opposed by both. What happened? I'll tell you what happened. The white citizens' councils came over from Mississippi into Alabama. And they organized the community and the campus. They made it impossible for any Negro student to go there. And so we were all shocked at what happened. And now there are a lot of us that are not too shocked. The reason we're not too shocked, because again, we're doing the same thing that everybody else has been doing all along. We've been trying to wash the guilt off of our own minds. We've been trying to excuse away and justify. And indeed, it just so happens that I read all good newspapers. And I read your campus newspaper. Just like the New York Times. All the news that's fit to print. Before I get to this last part of what I have to say, I want to read parts of this. You know that letter that came from the student at Alabama University? I think this is unbelievable that anybody would pay enough attention to it to print such a letter. I find from this letter what I find in a lot of thinking, that Miss Arthurine Lucy is solely responsible for everything that happened down there. She threw the rocks. She threw the tomatoes. She threw the rotten eggs. She defied the president. She was the 2,000 mob that was bent on killing her. She had those 8 rifles that were found fully loaded, including 6 high-powered rifles. She was the one that had the rope that she was going to be lynched by. How can you blame one colored girl for what everybody else did? It said in this letter that what brought it about was the fact that she drove up in a large, latest model Cadillac. So what? Is it a crime to have a Cadillac? Is it crime to ride in a Cadillac? Must all Negroes not have a Cadillac because I can't afford one? There are more Jaguars, Thunderbirds, and MGs on the campus of the University of Alabama than any of you in this audience have ever seen. And on Fraternity Row, I doubt they have anything there smaller than a convertible Cadillac. I've been on Fraternity Row down there. But it's wrong for a Negro to have a Cadillac. It wasn't her car. Friend drove her down there. So that's what started it. She drove up in a Cadillac. Now, according to this letter, the next thing that happened, she was accompanied with a corps of television and newspaper cameramen and reporters. That's just a lie. She was not accompanied by anybody but one reporter. And he wasn't a real reporter. He's the owner of a newspaper. She was escorted through the registration without having to stand in line. She was escorted by the Dean of Women of the University of Alabama. The Dean of Women came out and says, I imagine you are offering Lucy. She said, yes. She said, well, come with me. Well, what's she supposed to do? Say, I'm not going to go with you. I'm going to stand here. What's she supposed to do? All of these great details. While they rushed ahead of everyone else, the other students had to stand in line and wait. This caused resentment. Now they say her back has pushed her and pushed her just to see how far they could go. There were no backers there. Then they say when she was refused dormitory space, she went charged out there charging with threats of, quote, determined to get in the dormitory if I have to get a court order, end of quote. That is a deliberate lie. She never said it. And she's denied this under oath, incidentally. And it was that way about everything. In place of being humble and modest, her backers pushed her into saying she was going to court, etc. Then it says it all adds up to a flair for publicity. And that she was overdressed. That's what it says here. We need not to say, leave it to somebody else, but what can I do? In the state of Illinois, before we cry our hearts out about authoring Lucy in the University of Alabama, let's shed some tears for Cairo, Illinois, where segregation is so rampant, it's almost unbelievable. And where in areas of southern Illinois, today, Negroes go down into Kentucky when they get a week off because they feel safer in Kentucky than they do in Illinois. Don't cry about the fact that the Negroes' homes were bombed in Birmingham, Alabama when they moved into a white neighborhood. When you realize that we've had police guard on Trumbull Park for so long, they're becoming fixtures there to protect a few Negro families in Illinois. Don't worry too much about civil rights violations on accommodations in the South when you realize in many areas of this state, Negroes are denied service as late as today. Don't worry too much about what's going to happen in South Africa or this place or that place. Bear in mind that this is not a part-time job, this is a full-time job, and there's room in it for everybody. And the only thing I don't think too much of is the mere discussion of it without the willingness to act. There is much that can be done here as well as much that can be done in Alabama. It's unbelievable that anybody in their thinking or in their discussion can find so much to defend lawless people. I actually have heard people defend those two men who confessed to killing Emmett Till by saying that, according to that look story, I mean life story, no, it wasn't life, it was look, excuse me, that in that particular story, it was obvious that little Emmett made him mad. Well, anger's never been any justifiable excuse for murder. If so, I would have committed many a murder in my past if anger's the only thing that'll quit you. No, the truth of the matter is that when we up here in the North, in Abraham Lincoln's state, get this big cloak around us and feel bad about others, it's not this. Yes, the South is bad. Yes, it's getting worse. I am not saying that Illinois is as bad as Mississippi, as I've heard people say. It is not. And indeed, Mississippi is not as bad as the Union of South Africa. So what? As long as Mississippi is in the United States, as long as Alabama is in the United States, please bear in mind that the governor of all of the states, every state officer of every state, must take an oath to uphold Article 6 of the United States Constitution, which says that that Constitution is the supreme law of the land. All state laws and constitutional provisions to the contrary, notwithstanding. The Constitution requires every state officer to take that oath. If the officers in these southern states I've been talking about have taken the oath, they're violating it, and if they didn't take it, they're holding office illegally. Either way, they're in trouble in my book. Don't believe that the decision of the United States Supreme Court is something that people can take or reject as they want to. The decision of the Supreme Court is the supreme law of the land, says Article 6. It's not what I want to have or don't want to have. It's what the Supreme Court says we're entitled to. And it's what the Supreme Court says the other side has to give. So it's no longer a question of Authorine Lucy, or little Mose Wright, or little Joe Blow. It's no longer the question of whether Negroes shall have their rights as such. It's a question of whether the law of the land shall be respected. Once you learn disrespect for one decision of the Supreme Court, there's very little difficulty in building up disrespect for others. I think the problem as of today is just that simple. The only thing I have tried to emphasize is that the problem is no different from the one that's been here since this fight started. It's merely that this Alabama situation has so focused our attention that it's up to us to look to it in the future as to whether or not we're going to isolate it or whether we're going to let it be a pattern for the future. That's all I've tried to do, and I understand there are going to be some questions. If you've got any questions to ask, I will tell you whether or not I can answer them. And I will not tell you that I can't answer them because of this problem or that problem. I'd most likely tell you I don't know the answer. You want some questions? Yes, sir. Well, I gave you the till, which is to put money in some other place that they can get a hold of. That's the only one I know of. Were you asking whether or not there are any legal ways of counteracting it? By courts? I doubt it. We're working on it. We have a team of lawyers working on it. But the last thing they produced was a memorandum with 67 pages. Well, I take the position that if it takes you 67 pages to spell out your theory is no good. The only way I know of is to put the money and get counter money in there. That's the only way I know.